Hey friends, it's your intrepid warrior, David Land, Julie, with my good friend and colleague, Margaret Katz-Kan.
Hey, David.
Hey, Margaret. So we're here today to talk about Margaret's new set of eyeglasses slash vision, which she wrote about in a very amusing and entertaining post on LinkedIn. You can go check that out on her from her profile. She's got a really cool photograph with her wearing, trying on some new glasses so she could see the lanes of traffic more clearly. And that in that post, she talks about seeing more lanes. She didn't use that metaphor, but I'm using it. Seeing more lanes of her zone of genius and work. So I was curious, and I did comment on your post, Margaret, about this because I do see your zones of genius, which may have been blurred by the old glasses. So what's coming into view now for you?
Yeah. Oh, I'm just going to spend 1 minute just telling the story for anybody who hasn't read it, which is that I've been just limping through eye care at a, there's a whole different podcast about this, but the eyeglass office that I was going to is one of those ones that's owned by a, private equity firm. And I'm not sure that I had fully interacted with that or understood the, what happens to the level of care, or at least what happened in this office, which is, after 5 years of, my, this doesn't feel quite right, or like I'm still feeling a little blurry, and they just kept, gaslighting me. I don't know, but I finally, not even in service of my own vision, but I finally, in service of fashion, was so sick of my old driving glasses, which hadn't been updated in years, and I kept waiting for my prescription to change, and they kept telling me that my prescription hadn't changed. So I was suffering through a really old-fashioned pair of glasses. I say that tongue in cheek, but I saw this sassy pair of frames at a new eyeglass office, and so I popped in to go try on the frames, and I ended up getting an eye exam there, and come to find out that every single prescription that I have, my contacts, my glasses, my distance, my reading, like I was in both eyes, I was 0 for 6 in terms of having correct prescriptions. And yeah, so never one to miss a good metaphor, I started wondering. I mean, there was a lot that I wondered about why I wouldn't have pushed harder, and that, there's a lot to read about in the article, but where we arrive today is the metaphor of like, what is it in our lives that we keep blurry? Like, how is there? I'm not saying that I intentionally kept things blurry, but I think somehow some wise and crafty and strategic part of us sometimes manages to do a really good job of not showing us something clearly that needs to be seen. And so that was kind of the point of the article. And the example that I gave was around, I think I've known for a long time that there's more that I want to do in the world. There's more impact I want to have that still can include the fundraising work that I do, but there's so much that is, that is promising for me. That's exciting that, and I think, David, you made this switch quite a few years ago. So, and we've been talking
Well,
about a switch. I'm expanding.
maybe about a year and a half ago or so, where I chose to focus more intently on leadership development and coaching, as opposed to being attached to with a broader audience. You and I both received similar advice when we were starting our business, was to, niche it down and
Right.
focus.
Pick a
And
niche.
that's
Talk about your niche. Don't be too broad. Just because you can do everything doesn't mean you should do everything. Yeah.
And that's how we met each other. And that, so that there was some gift. There was certainly a gift in that, as I see it, in our collaboration and what we've created together over the past few years, including this show. And like you, I wanted Focus would be the word. I wanted to focus more on the helping leaders, regardless of where they came from or what, regardless of what industry they worked in. And so, in some senses, I was opening up. We can keep going with the optical metaphors. I was opening up my aperture.
David's trying to create a drinking game for all you in the audience. Every time you
Right.
make a pun or a reference to vision,
Right. The other person has to drink,
take a
so do a
sip of
shot.
your
Do it.
tea. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yes. Oh, we're doing a teetotaling drinking game. Okay.
Want to promote irresponsible behavior.
Right. So I'm happy. I was very excited to hear, to read what you wrote about, in terms of expanding your aperture. And I'd like to, have you share what that might look like, with the audience. So what does it look like, at least right now? I mean, you have some more. You got some new glasses coming, so you might be able to see clearly what's happening.
That's true. And I think that again, the metaphor is, what are the things that we do in life where we keep our potential or our dreams or things that we long for in the blurry because it just feels safer to keep doing what we're doing. And for me, when I became a coach, the most obvious niche for me to get into, and I don't know how to pronounce that word, niche, so I'm just owning that right now. I might go back and forth.
Well, you
But
are going to France in a couple of weeks, so you could ask a Frenchman
right,
how to pronounce
niche, yes,
niche,
so
niche.
niche, yeah, like rhymes with quiche, maybe.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, but we're just going right off.
Real coaches have niche.
That's right. Anyway, fundraising was such an obvious thing. And I want to be clear too, like I actually loved being a fundraiser. So it wasn't, but I always have suspected that there could be a bigger, arena that I could play in. And what really lights me up with my fundraising clients, but it is the, their personal journeys of finding a voice and, learning to heal and integrate things that have made it hard for them to ask and to take up more space and to tap into their leadership. And there's so much that happens in those journeys. And I thought, well, that's great, but like people don't actually need to raise money to want to have some of those that more compelling way to live and interact with the world.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, there are lots of folks who are interested. Well, I guess this is I might be making this up, or at least I've been making this up for the last year and a half or so, that there are more folks out there who are interested in the kind of work that you and I do that's not limited to folks from the nonprofit world, although I still enjoy working with folks from the nonprofit world. And some of you may have noticed, and I know Margaret is aware, that I kind of cut out of whole cloth a whole new coaching program for leaders on a spiritual path that I just things that I've written about over the years. And I just got inspired to sort of say, wow, why don't I just, I mean, this is like me getting out of that blurry comfort
You
zone.
had,
And
David, you had a clear vision.
I've got some new glasses. In fact, I have news for you, Margaret, and for everyone else in the audience. So as I kind of had sketched out the seven practices of leaders on a spiritual path, and I had written about each one of these, and I just went back and found those writings and embellished them a little bit more, published them, started collecting these because that's going to be the workbook for the program. And I was like, okay, wow, this is a nice little collection. Like, There's some meat to this. So, as of today, that collection is now available on Amazon in Kindle, paperback, and hardcover for my ninth book.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, super cool.
Congratulations. That's
Thank you.
exciting.
Thank you. It's about, it's just under 100 pages, so it's a little, just kind of like a little volume. And so that's what clarity and inspiration. I'm sharing that story once, well, also because I wanted to let you and the audience know that that's available. And there's some great writing in there. If you don't, even if you don't want to come into the coaching program, it will help you if you're on a spiritual path. But also to see how once you get that clarity or flash of inspiration, so other things come out of it. So I'm curious with you, and sometimes we talk about this as our zone of genius, like where, you know, it's work that we know we're excellent at, but also brings us great joy. So I'm curious, Margaret, where are you in that right now? And I know you're doing some work around somatic coaching, so I really want to hear about that.
I think so. Just to for the audience, your zone of genius is the place where two things happen, and one is that you feel very good at it. You believe that you have gifts to offer, and and that you can reclaim or keep claiming your value in this chosen kind of work. And then the second part of zone of genius is it makes you feel lit up. It makes you feel alive, because most of us have also a zone of excellence where we're really good at it, but it's like, meh, right, where it doesn't really light us up. So that's kind of the differentiation here. And
Well, that's related to our last conversation around joy. So, you know, it's
yeah,
just,
right, that
it
it's
does.
joyful.
Yeah, brings joy, brings it's very joyful, the work.
Yeah, and I
So
would
tell me about
say,
this somatic coaching, because I have a feeling, that's just my intuition, that this is something that might be in your zone of genius, and something that you want to do more of. So let's hear
yeah,
it.
I think it's really just about this arc that happens during a coaching relationship where people come with, their basket full of problems, which they may feel a lot of shame about, or they may just be so sick of habits that they have and they're ready for something new. And yeah, I would say, this area of zone of genius, and I do this with people. Again, they come to me because they are having trouble raising money. And it turns out when we do a little bit of digging, well, that's, because you're struggling to feel comfortable with your voice, or because, you seed the room all the time and you don't feel, you haven't appointed yourself a leader yet, or, you have imposter syndrome, or there's a whole collection of possible things that can challenge people. And, to me, the breaking of those habits and the finding different narratives, putting down the old stories that don't serve you anymore, and then forming new habits and trying new things and showing up in a situation with like one really brave thing that you're gonna try. But I'm really also just finding that when we bring the body and the somatic work in, it just sticks better. The new thing that you want to do, when you anchor it both in your mind that it's something you want to try, and then you find the way to manage the old pattern in your body so that you don't revert back to your old ways. It just adds a whole new dimension. And there is nothing that lights me up so much as people coming back after, a couple weeks in between sessions, and they've tried something new, or they've had some giant success, or they had a really hard conversation that they have been terrified to have, and they had it and they lived. Like, they did not, vaporize. Like, they lived through it, and they, did a few little flexes in the muscle that was so hard, and then they're proud of themselves for having done something that they would have avoided before. So I think it's that's a lot of words,
Yeah.
but it's
Well, what I'm hearing is that I'm hearing a few things. A couple of things came up for me as you were sharing. Is that first of all, I'm aware that many of the clients that you've mentioned, and many, many more, beyond your current clients are stuck in the hyper, well, the rational analytical side of their brain, which is where a lot of the conditioning in the educational system and in the professional world now leads calls for people are rewarded for it. But there's this whole other side of the brain, and including the body, that kind of gets ignored. But there's a lot of information and wisdom in those other sides of the body, a brain and the other part of the body. So I remember recently talking with one of my clients, and I don't do this somatic work like you do, but this is just a few weeks ago, and this is a very, very rational, analytical person, and he was getting super heady about stuff, and I just said, like, well, where do you feel that in your body? And you're like, what?
I don't feel anything in my
Don't
body.
feel it.
Yeah,
Yeah,
that's a.
exactly. So you can do little things like, I know you go deeper, and it is a way of anchoring stuff. This person tends to have a fair amount of anxiety, and one of the reasons the anxiety is there because a lot of that is happening in that, hypervigilant, hyper-rational, even though hypervigilance and hyper-rational don't go together because hypervigilance is completely irrational, but yet a lot of hyper-rational people are hyper-vigilant, so go figure. It's all happening in the brain. Well, what the hell is your body telling you? I mean, maybe there's another part of you that know has some wisdom.
And I just, want to say, I think many people come very honestly to the sort of separation of brain and body, where it was very adaptive for them as children to, to learn how to stop feeling because there wasn't anybody, it wasn't the kind of family that wanted to hand them the talking stick and encourage them to, share their sad or their disappointment. Like for people who didn't grow up in that family and grew up in the different kind of family where, where it was much more adaptive to not be needy, I think people very honestly separate, they stop paying attention to the cues of their body. And I know this sounds ridiculous, but there are people out there, who like they don't even remember that they have to pee until they have to pee like now. And I'm not talking about 6-year-olds or 4-year-olds, like grown-up people where they're so disconnected or they don't notice that they're hungry until they start shaking from low blood sugar. I mean, there's some pretty extreme, and again, it's a coping strategy that we come up with as children.
Well, I'll bring in a couple of things here. There are a number of things that both you and I do, and others can participate in. I'm thinking about yoga in particular, a way of connecting the mind. That's what the word yoga means, yoking the mind to the body. At least that's my understanding. That's the way the word has been described to me. And I do, in the gentle yoga that I participate in, I don't do this hot stuff and all this crazy flow. And I just do gentle yoga because it really does give me the opportunity to sense what's going on both in my mind and my body over the period of an hour. So I think that's a very good practice, and I'd like to hear what you have to say about that as a way of getting in tune.
And I mean, David, I'm just gonna name like true or otherwise my intuition, is on the jujitsu mat. You ask a lot from your body. You ask
Correct.
it sometimes to work through pain and discomfort and, getting thrown around. And then when we're in yoga and we're inviting, right? Like, how far does your downward dog want to go, and what feels yummy, and like, can I wiggle this way, and can I wiggle that way? Like, we're asking our body what it wants rather than the other way around, which is why I think yoga
Well,
is such a lovely practice.
it is a lovely practice. I think they both in I've been practicing yoga with a particular instructor for many, many years now, and we kind of have a very I used to you've been with me on the beach with
I've
her,
practiced on the
Tanya.
beach in
You
Naples.
practice on the beach. And when Lillian and I moved, I went over to a studio where she teaches, because it just takes too much time for me to get to and from the beach now. But she creates a lot of space for that gentle space. So what I say to her, because sometimes I'll go to yoga, then I'll go to jiu-jitsu, and I say to her, "Well, Tanya, this is my gentle time. Now I'm going to go be fierce." But yesterday was very interesting, just along these lines. And you could be doing anything. You can go for a walk, you can go swimming, you can go running, anything that, you can lift weights, you could do anything that gets you into your body and out of your head. But yesterday I was training with a partner, a jiu-jitsu partner, and I was trying to execute a sweep. This is when you can take somebody and kind of flip them over, right? And not a throw, but it's on the ground. So I had been, it's so interesting, like, because the mind will get in your way in jiu-jitsu, just like your mind will get in your way in enjoying yoga. So I had put myself into the position to execute this thing called a sweep. And then I just had to wait and wait. And I mean, it seemed like an eternity. It was like 4 minutes. I was in this position, and my partner was, and he knew what I was trying to do. And there was no amount of thinking that was going to make this sweep happen. And then he moved 1 inch, maybe 2 inches, in the direction I wanted him to go, and wham! He went right over. But I had to feel that. There was no thinking about it. It was literally, I felt his weight shift to my side that I wanted him to go by 2 inches maximum. And that was just the amount, but it was just like whammo. Like, it's so, when you listen to your body, there's no thinking. It just, you just, it's like whammo.
I've been
Anyway.
working recently with a creativity and writing coach, which has been amazing. And one of the things that I've really been able to name, because she's a coach and she asks me all kinds of, good questions, and she's had me thinking about, why do I write? And when I write and when I get into the flow of it, i.e., when I stop overthinking what it is that I want to say, or I get out of the LinkedIn mold of like needing to have a point and a, whatever, whatever. But I tap into a part of my brain, that just doesn't get used for anything that is not creative. And it's a delightful state to be in. And as you're talking about, I think there's equivalents of that in our bodies, right? When we
It's flow.
get
There's no
into a
doubt about it.
flow of movement, or honestly, even when you stand in front of the fridge and you get a strong like body signal about what your body wants to be fed, right? It's like just seeding, when you seed the microphone to your body and let it be the smart one for a little while, it just brings everything, like there's more breath, right? Like we can all just breathe better. It just creates space in a different way.
So here's where I'm curious, like, and this is where this type of coaching that we're talking about for you, Margaret, somatic coaching, was kind of in this, it's in this new clarity that you're having. You could stay with the old glasses and see things blurry, but now I think you've got these new glasses, which are seeing a whole new zone of genius for you. And I'm wondering what might be possible for you and for people outside the fundraising profession. I'm talking about the corporate people who have maybe some of them are listening to this and are interested in it, or maybe some of them are like, that's a little weird, but I'm wondering what impact you could have.
Yeah, I mean, I believe that, if we have lost touch with our bodies, it was a coping strategy, and I believe it is possible for everybody to reconnect, in some ways and to tap into this incredible source of wisdom and decision making and intuition. I know these are themes that come up a lot in our podcasts, but yeah, this work that I'm interested in and expanding into, really is about how do you find your leadership and your voice, looking beyond just here in this little part of your brain that most of us spend so much of our time in, when there are actually so many other resources available to us in our bodies and through creativity. And so yeah, I think it's powerful for leadership journeys. It's powerful for personal growth journeys. It's powerful for how you want to show up in a relationship that you don't feel good about or that you think could be better. It's sort of has so many applications.
In the last episode, we talked about the electromagnetic energy of the brain and the electromagnetic energy of the heart, and
Heart, yeah.
I sent you a reference on this, and I was right. It's about it's about two orders of magnitude greater. The magnetic field of the heart is about 100 times greater than the magnetic field and of the brain. Now, if we think about this, I had this thought after we had this last conversation. If you think about leadership as presence and magnetic, like some people who are charismatic, they have magnetism. Literally, that's what it's called. But that's not because they're brilliant and they're working from the brain. It's because they are working from their heart, which is part of this somatic rediscovery that you're
Yeah.
talking about, I think.
Right. And we're not trying to throw the brain under the bus. I'm never
Oh,
trying to throw the
no.
brain under the bus, but I think part of actually what's magnetic is this integration, right?
Right.
It's not
Yes.
forgetting that you have a body. It's inviting your body to be part of who you are and how you lead and how you show up and how you look when you're magnetic.
And in the Buddhist tradition, it's like a hyphenated word called, heart mind. Heart mind.
Yeah.
That's literally for like thousands of years, we've been aware of this. But it's
Except for
that
then we
connection.
forgot.
What is
Except
it? We
then we
forgot.
forgot.
We forgot. I know. Well, that's the problem. I mean, not a problem, but it's just the evolution of society and organizations. It tends to value or put a priority on the rational analytical aspects of the mind. And even in as you were saying, you were essentially going to a optometrist that lost touch with the heart aspect of caring for a patient. And this happens everywhere in the medical industrial complex now. In other words, it's all about, in private equity, it's all about squeezing out as much as you can so that you can turn around and sell it. And who cares that, you keep saying that it's just not right?
Yeah. And I do write this, but in 5 years, I went once a year for 5 years, and not once ever did I see the same person more than one time. There was not a doctor. I had five different doctors in 5 years, and the front of the house staff was completely, turned over every single time that I was ever in there. And I just think, yeah, there's no heart in that business.
So, what else are you seeing in this new vision of genius?
Boy, oh. There's a lot, I think it's got some, I don't know, like there's probably another podcast at this point, but
Okay.
just the things to see in relationship, how it's all related, but the ways that my brain can pull me out, and I need my heart to be in for my relationship to feel good to me. So it's pretty
You're not
pivotal
alone. You're not
concept.
alone.
No, I'm pretty sure that's true for literally every person on the planet.
I think we both had it recently. We both had a vivid, again, there's another word, vivid experience. You got to take a shot of tea.
It's water, but I'm staying hydrated for
All
sure.
right. Yeah, that is when the body's like 90% water, you gotta have lots of water in
Lot of
it.
water.
We each of us had an experience with our one of our loved ones having, with Kevin, having an incident that woke you up and and with me and Lillian, as awakened as my love is for Lillian, it woke up even more. So I that's where heart can come in. And I do think these incidents where you really you and this is where the brain and the mind can come in. You realize like how much, something happens to someone you love, and then you realize how much you really love them. You feel it, but you also you understand it in your mind in a totally different way. And I think that's what you're talking about in terms of the stickiness. First, you feel it in your heart, and then you realize, and then it sticks in your brain, the memory of that heartfelt experience.
I think we both got a little time with the ghost of Christmas Future, right? And it was empty of your person, right? Where you allowed yourself to think about what it would be like to do this alone and not have my partner and your wife, there with you. And it's pretty grim for me. It was shocking and very unwelcome. And Kevin's fine, and Lillian is also fine. So it
And
was a
that's
gift
fine.
now to be able to talk about this. Like, oh, I got the help pulled by the hand into about a minute and a half of that vision of the future without him. And I sure didn't like it much. And it's been able to just help my heart remember, like, I love this person. Like, why am I messing around with all the noise? Like, what matters? Right? Like what actually matters here?
I think in both of these cases, we each of us allowed ourselves to feel the actually experience the grief and sadness that we would experience if that person were not in our lives. And this is actually a very good practice. So I think maybe this is where we can end it today, because this is actually a practice that comes, I'm sure, from your somatic work and also from the philosophies of Buddhism and Stoicism, is actually to imagine a loved one dying. And what it's more, it is a heart mind exercise. So you have to imagine this person not being in your life and let your heart break in that moment. Let your heart break. Actually, the brain will want to come in and not let you do this because you don't want to feel that feel because it's so horrible. But I think I'm speaking for myself, and I hope I'm speaking, I want to hear your thoughts. But if you allow yourself to feel that heartache, your love for that person goes to a whole nother level.
Right. And conversely, honestly, if you allow yourself to play that out and you feel relief, or you notice that it is not heartbreak that you feel, that's really important information
That
as well.
is that. Oh, that's brilliant. All
Yeah.
right. This is your zone of genius. Yeah, that's brilliant.
Welcome to
All right.
my welcome into my yeah way of seeing
Yeah.
the world. Yeah.
All right. Anything more to say about this?
No, just to no, I like that. Let's just leave it there, and
Yeah.
we'll see y'all next time.
I'll say one more thing. If you
Okay.
wanna, if you wanna work, if you want to work on your getting in touch with your feelings and your body, definitely reach out to Margaret. If you want to get in touch with working on your feelings and the spiritual side of your leadership, get in touch with
Get in
me.
touch with David. Yeah.
And if you want both, then we can put something together. For your leadership team, combining these elements. All
Absolutely.
right, friends. Well, go put it into practice.